The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello, you're very welcome along to the latest episode of The Home Show podcast with me, your host, Sinead Ryan. Coming up on this episode, I'll be chatting with interior designer Anne Toohey, that's the Room Junkie. She'll be sharing her top tips for transforming galley kitchens. So if you've got a small dark kitchen in your house, well, she will have all of the solutions. Interior designer Denise O'Connor will be telling us how to add value to our property, whether you're selling it or you want to upgrade it, and especially for those who are pet owners. We'll be exploring the fascinating world of fairy forts. Now, they're an iconic feature of Ireland's countryside. You'll be absolutely shocked by how many there are and all of the ancient and mysterious legends associated with those. And we've sent Niamh Marr shopping. She's our shopping guru. And this time she has been avidly looking for all of the gadgets featuring on Meghan Markle's Netflix series. If you'd like to get in touch with us on the podcast, we love to hear from listeners during the week. We're on The Home Show at newstalk.com. And of course, I'm on social media. I'm on X, I'm on Instagram, and you can find me there. If you have a route around for Sinead Ryan, you will find us there. If you miss any of the bits, of course, they're all up on podcast, newstalk.com, or on the Newstalk app, which is powered by Go Loud. Now, galley kitchens are often a challenge when it comes to design, but they're becoming increasingly popular, especially in new homes, because of their efficient use of space. So to help us transform these narrow, often overlooked areas into stylish and functional spaces, we're joined once again by interior designer, the Room Junkie herself, Anne Toohey. Anne, you're very welcome back to the show.
It is always my pleasure.
Now, talk to me about the challenges that come with a galley kitchen. And just in case anybody doesn't know what it is, it's a kitchen in the centre of a house, so, or part of an open plan area. So it tends not to have natural light or windows, and it's kind of sandwiched between two living areas. Isn't that right?
Correct. It's actually modelled on a ship's kitchen, which, and if you think about it, a ship's kitchen is probably one of the most efficient kitchens that you can get. So I actually think there's something quite sexy about a galley kitchen. It's almost like the sports car of kitchen layouts, because it's sleek, it's streamlined, and it's designed for performance. You have to have it working at optimal performance.
And we know, we've had designers on the show, Anne, before, who would be dealing, let's say, at the upper echelons of the interiors market. And I know some of them say that at the top end, a lot of these great grand houses have two kitchens. One is the show-off kitchen with all the islands and the appliances, but the other is the chef's kitchen. And very often it's a galley kitchen. It's very small. It's built in a rectangle or a triangle, because it's for production rather than performance.
But, you know, people, I think, worry about space and not having space. What you need, you don't need more space. You need more organisation. In the house that we built, I had that kitchen, a massive kitchen with a four oven aga and oodles of superfluous cupboards. Now I have a smaller kitchen. I think it works far more efficiently and I really enjoy it. But it's what you do with it. You have to be, every millimetre of space has to be accounted for. It's like ages ago I talked to you about little pods that I designed up on the Wild Atlantic Way in Donegal, the tiniest space I've ever designed. And, you know, if that for me was a lesson in designing a galley kitchen, it was the best lesson ever.
So when it comes then to the storage solutions, but also the design, because the galley kitchens can be quite dark. They don't all, you know, you'd rarely get windows in them, or if you do, they'd be very small. So what are the design elements that make them work?
Okay, I would work firstly with your work triangle, the old-fashioned work triangle. It's obviously different in a galley kitchen because it's a linear triangle. So you have two options, and I would always optimise having the sink, because your sink is used so much, having a central sink. So you can either have your fridge, sink, cooker on one wall, or if you've got two parallel counters, you have your fridge and sink on one wall and the cooker on the and the work prep on the other wall. So you need to think about that very carefully. But with the lightness and the brightness, I mean, having light coloured units is going to help. Having a glossy finish is going to help. Even having a mirrored splashback to bounce light back under cabinet lighting, even and things like a handleless cabinet, you know, keeping it all sleek and streamlined. Mm. And sometimes in the pods, what I did was I actually had a very bright, in some of them they were orange, and others was a vibrant green splashback, which actually added interest, but it didn't take away from the sense of space in any sense. It just added fun.
So you're using that as your colour pop without actually having to build anything out of it.
Yes. And interestingly, down in those pods, I'd say 99% of people would have put in a white kitchen. I actually put in a dark charcoal kitchen, but it was a glossy finish. And it worked. It was an absolute statement piece that you saw when you walked in. But as well as that, I think no cupboards, deep drawers. You know, you have to and maximize your vertical space as well, whatever wall space you have, you know, whether that's magnetic knife. Mm. You know what I'm talking about, the stainless steel things the knives go on, or even hanging pans, even though I don't like to see clutter of any sort, but you know, shelves, just being very mindful about what you've got. Another thing too, I suppose, is streamlined appliances, very important. Fridge drawers as opposed to a fridge, combination oven, microwave, built-in appliances, anything that's going to make it streamlined and efficient, because a cook will easily, I mean, think of all the professional chefs working on high-end yachts, mm. you know, worth hundreds of millions, and they're creating these Michelin quality
yeah. food. Yeah, in a tiny, literally in a galley kitchen. So I just want to reference back something you said there, because it can sound counterintuitive, and yet we've heard time and time again, when you're trying to create the illusion of space, we would normally go for white or cream or light, but actually creating something in a dark streamlined colour can kind of trick your mind into thinking it's bigger. Isn't that right? So where do you stand then on like open shelving? Because to me, it just makes me cry at the tidiness I'm going to have to do all the time. I
wouldn't have one in a million years. No, I'm the girl who likes to have, I'm Maria Montessori, everything in its place, the place for everything, but in a cupboard behind a closed door. I think too, no more than in the chef's galley kitchen, you need to be meticulously tidy. Everything okay. has to be cleared away. You know, that is part of it. But I suppose optimizing what you've got and being, you know, doing a ruthless declutter, even if what you need to have in your kitchen and only have, you don't need to have 10 wooden spoons, you know.
Mm.
Just minimize what you have the whatever you're comfortable using, use, but don't be intimidated by the idea that you have this small kitchen. Now, one thing I will say, though, that's really, really important. If you have the two parallel counters, the double galley, you need to have at least, in old money, 4 foot up to 6 foot of a walkway for comfortable working. That would be a non-negotiable for me.
Okay. And I wonder, is that kind of a regulatory thing? You know, would you always get that in a small apartment, a small interior apartment, Anne?
Well, I'll tell you, I would compromise on something else. And compromise is not a word I like to use, but it is not going to work. In a bigger kitchen, believe it or not, you know, you get away with less space between your island and your units. But this is important. This is where you're working, and two people could be working in that space. So minimum 4 foot, you buy that space from somewhere else.
Okay. All right. This good call.
Important, you know, before you do anything, that you know exactly what you want and what you want to achieve and what you can get away with, what you can make work.
And then when it comes to the cooker, you know, the main part, like I know there are small apartments, now maybe there are student apartments and that, who manage just with the fancy microwave, the air fryer, or whatever. Like, is it possible to fit in beautiful kind of gas ring cookers in a small galley kitchen like that?
I would think probably not. You can still get a very good electrical oven or a gas oven if that's what you want, and have an induction hob on top. I think anything that maximizes your worktop. So the induction hob, when it's not in use, you know, you can have a glass cover on it or just use it as it is. So at least you've got that worktop, because you're going to have a minimal worktop. So maximizing as much as you can. That's why not having a tall freezer, maybe having the fridge drawers and fridge freezer drawers, rather than something that's taken up workspace. Or even if you have the double parallel counters, if you had one of them that was quite clear for the workspace and your appliances on the other, this would be a really good time to have a cooker tap or one of those instant hot water taps. You know, anything that minimizes or maximizes the available spaces you have.
Yeah, because of course, if you have the cooker tap, and I am a huge fan, I don't have one because I can't afford it, but I'd love one because you get rid of the kettle.
Money well spent. Money well spent. You need to be careful. I'm not going to mention brands and stuff, but you need to be careful which one you go for.
Okay.
You need 100-degree boiling water, but honestly, I don't have one either, but I recommend everybody, all my new builds, to put one in
and
save the money from somewhere else.
Okay, now a final question, Anne, on the topic of lighting, because I know there are very, very clever solutions for lighting, especially those strips that you put under shelving or under cabinets. How would you maximise lighting for a very small area like that where there might not be any natural light?
Well, you know what? You're just reading my mind. Before you said that, I'm thinking I must mention lighting. You need to layer your lighting. And this in itself will give you, it will give you that illusion of space. So there are very, very sleek lights that you can put under counter lights. It's one space where I would most definitely maximise your light. So your overhead light, I probably would go with recessed spots to give you maximum light. And I mean, the ones that I've just changed all my lights here, and it's amazing. So now with the recessed lights, instead of seeing the chrome or the gold circle, what you see is the light, and the light is the best recreation of natural light that I've come across. So you can certainly improve the light above the kitchen. You can even have those, you know, those angled lights that come out over the tops of your units as well.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
Architecture looking, and they're lovely as well. So I would almost go overkill with the light. Certainly any way that you can maximize light in a kitchen by layering the light, not just having one or two lights, having different sources of light.
Wonderful. All right. Well, Anne, a mine of information as usual. So even if your kitchen is small, is in the middle of the house and you're stuck with it, you can actually end up with, what did you call them? The more sexy kitchen. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the sports car kitchen.
The sports car kitchen.
I veer more towards the darker. I love cars anyway, but the darker car, this may be something a little bit more sexy rather than just having a white or a beige kitchen. Go bold and, you know, and just pour the light on it, pour the love on it as well.
Fantastic. All right. Well, you can find Anne too. Anne, thanks a million for coming on the show. You can find Anne on Instagram at Room Junkie Anne, and all of her tips and her little videos and all of that are always a joy to look at. So thanks again for all of those tips.
You're so welcome.
Now, if you want to get the most out of your property, whether you're selling it or just looking to add some value, well, we have you covered on The Home Show. Interior designer Denise O'Connor of Optimised Design joins me now to share her expert advice on how to increase your home's value with some things you're probably already doing. Denise, you're very welcome to the show. Now, you wrote an article this week earlier on this particular issue in the Irish Times. And it was what's in, what's out, what people are looking for when they're looking to buy houses. I was astonished to see pet spaces on it. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, it's something that we started seeing, particularly over COVID. I think there were a lot of pet parents popping up during that time when people, I suppose, were spending more time at home, realized, look, we're around, we could look after a pet, and just pets became a very significant part of the family for so many people. So when, you know, things started opening up again and people started renovating their homes, they were looking at ways to make them more suitable to cater for their pets. So things like practicality was really important, durable surfaces, but also storage and looking to store, you know, pet food, all the leads,
right,
ways to kind of make walking dogs easier, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Now, yes, that all sounds very sensible, but you did mention outdoor dog showers.
So it has evolved then. So since COVID, I mean, it's just becoming more mainstream, I guess. And like most recently, we have been asked to put a hot water tap outside. So it's the first time I've ever been asked to do anything like that. But again, that is just to make it much easier for that homeowner to wash down the dog, rinse off stuff after going for a long walk.
Ah, God, like love them. A hot water tap.
Yeah, right. So it's, you know, and a dog shower, it's a really common request now.
Right, there you go. You learn something new every day. I'm not with the cool people, clearly. Now, you mentioned COVID there, all the pet parents, but actually, of course, working from home was probably the single biggest issue. I know the offices are mad trying to get people back in, but is it still nearly now becoming a thing that, you know, homeowners saying, I absolutely have to have an office space?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, look, you know, more and more people are coming back into the office, but I think there's still that requirement for people to have some sort of flexibility to be able to work from home. I also think that people were working from home before all of this, but in a very uncomfortable and not very suitable surrounding. So now people are saying, look, I'm going to have to be catching up at the weekend or whatever. I want to be doing it in a space that's comfortable, suitable, and, you know, helps me be as productive as possible.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking up loads of time when I should be doing other things.
Yeah. Okay. And then listen, out of all the things now that are in, and people love the big extensions and the windows and all that kind of thing, you mentioned some things in your article, Denise, that are out, that people are not finding attractive anymore. And right up there, and I don't have one of these, so I'm feeling very smug about it, is the built-in coffee machine. Used to be a real fancy option.
Absolutely. Well, I worked in London for a long time, and I remember when I first started there, it really was a status symbol, you know, having the built-in coffee machine. And then, of course, it was choosing the appliance that would have the biggest status symbol, you know, you could possibly have. So it really was a feature that was aspirational. That's what people wanted. And now, like, I don't know one single client that's asking us for that. You know, coffee is such a personal thing. Nespresso machines, those sort of small, compact appliances that are so niche and can be tucked away, far more popular now.
Yeah, and I suppose if you want the old status symbol, you're going to go for the big, full-on £1,000 gadget anyway.
Yes, exactly. Or what we're seeing now instead is people are really keen on having those sort of breakfast bars or butler's pantries. So, you know, that almost like that pantry style where the doors fold back or open back and you've got your toaster and your coffee machine and your cereals, everything set up there for your breakfast, and then you close it all up. So that's really much more something that people are wanting to invest in rather than a very high-end appliance that they're sort of stuck with.
Indeed. Now, talk to me a little bit, finally, about how important it is to have smart home features or not, because I mean, I've limited stuff. Okay, I have the Hive for the heating, and I've a kind of a fancy microwave that I haven't really got to grips with yet, and the LED bulbs. Is it important that people have like the ring doorbell and things you can do with the touch of a button and lights that go on and off when you talk to them, or has that kind of gone out?
Yeah, so again, like if we think back sort of 15 years ago or so, smart home was very much a wired system that you'd be putting in. So it was a very complicated system that had to be wired in. You had to know you were doing it from the very early stages of the project. It really, again, it was an absolute, like, top of the range sort of thing. You know, it wasn't for everybody. It was for people with larger budgets. But they were very costly, and you know, there was a big question mark as to, well, what happens if that particular provider goes out of business, or how do I maintain it over the years? So then things really simplified with Bluetooth and wireless technology. So, for example, like a Google Home or something like that, you know, you can link that to speakers through wireless technology and have a complete sound system. But really, it depends on your, I suppose, appetite for technology. Like, I know some people are just allergic to it and they just want very simple, you know, old-fashioned ways of doing things. Other people are absolutely tech mad and love all this sort of smart technology. I do think it's getting much easier and much more accessible. So things like the Ring doorbell, like in terms of security and stuff like that, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Even for older people living on their own, you know, just being able to manage who's at the door and control all of that. So I do think there's huge advantages to them, but I would do a bit of investigation, because some of them are very complicated. Others are very, very intuitive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shop around.
Okay. So, like, to sum up then, forget the smart tech. People will sort that out themselves. Put in the wet room for the dog. and get a fancy office and you're sorted, your house will sell. All right, well, Denise O'Connor, Optimised Design, usually a regular guest on our show, but you're here for this. And you can read Denise's article there, very, very interesting, in the Irish Times. Denise, thanks a million for joining us again on The Home Show.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks, Sinead.
Ireland is steeped in myth and legend, and of course this is the weekend when we celebrate much of that. A few tales endure, like those belonging to the fairies. For generations, fairy forts have been seen as enchanted places best left undisturbed, with stories of bad luck and all being associated with that. So to explore their history and lasting cultural significance, I'm delighted to be joined by Clodagh Doyle, curator at the National Museum of Ireland. Clodagh, you're very welcome to the show. Now, fairy forts, describe to me in realistic terms, what actually is a fairy fort?
Well, I'm based in County Mayo in Thurlock, and I'm actually looking out at two fairy forts across in Thurlock village, and they're kind of circular earthen kind of enclosures. So they're circular enclosures made up of raised earth, and, you know, they're kind of large enough that a biggish house would fit onto them, you know, nowadays, but really they would have held a home. So they're actually just really farmsteads. They're kind of like enclosures where people lived there, and the enclosure part, which was raised of earth or stones, that would have protected, kind of kept your animals in, kept kind of wolves or, you know, foxes and other things out of the enclosure. And it would just give you shelter. So that's what they are. They're forts.
So they're just really old structures and old buildings has grown over. So they don't really have anything to do with, if it's just something myth that followed them afterwards.
That's it. And I suppose, you know, we've always had circular, they're generally circular. So we kind of favoured circular enclosures. And when you think of stone circles or stone forts, some of these like enclosures that we have will go back, if you think of Greenan an Aileach in Donegal and these beautiful stone structures, Stake Fort in Kerry, and this idea that, you know, they're really well built structures, and inside they would have been, especially when you find them on promontory forts or places where, like Dunangus on the Aran Islands, that's part of that idea of an enclosure and a protection, and you're safe and you're also keeping a watch on different things. So we have very old ones, and they are usually kind of on hilltops or promontory forts, and they would be kind of the ones that a lot of them on our coasts, and they would go back to the Bronze Age. But really, most of our ring forts, which is nearly 32,000 of them all over the country, they're pretty much earthen kind of remains. And sometimes we don't really see them, except we see them in crop marks when with aerial photography. And, you know, you see that this is an enclosure or circles all over our land. And basically, they were where people lived. That's all. And they stopped living in them probably in the early Middle Ages. And some of them are in being used up to the year 1000. So, you know, they're kind of recent. And then they're called different names, like you've heard the name Rath or List or Dune or Cashel. And these are other names for these ring forts. Mm. And they've really formed the names of so many of our place names. Even in Dublin, you have Rath Mines, Rathgar, Rath Rahini, like Heaney's Rath, you know, all these names, Rathmullen, Mullen's Rath, you know, Dún Laoghaire, Dún Laoghaire, and, you know, and then Lissadel, you know, there's so many different names with the word Liss in it. So we've all these place names that come back to the word ring fort and castles. And but why are they so associated with the fairies?
Yes.
It's just that they kind of, they suddenly stand in the landscape and people don't really touch them. And then there's the folklore grew up around them, that they were kind of like, they were almost like circles always felt like, enclosures always felt like the magic could happen. And when you think of our stone circles, a bit like Stonehenge, or, you know, this sort of sense of there's a lot of stone circles, just solitary boulders in a row or a circle. And a lot in Cork and Kerry, we would have stone circles. But that sense of when you're in the enclosure, magic can happen and superstition. So I think enclosures sort of end up being bringing up that sense of superstition.
Right.
And then there was kind of that idea that the fairies were heard, and then superstition comes to the point where they're associated with fairies because people don't want to go near them because they're almost seen as kind of areas where they're protected. You don't want to disturb something that's associated with the past, so you don't go near it.
Indeed.
You know? And then it becomes... Yeah.
And there was a kind of, like, I know we're kind of celebrating all things leprechaun this weekend, but there are some people out there, and sorry, some quite sensible grown-up people who still believe in fairies and in the power of fairy forts. Now, I'm thinking notably back to 2017 TD Danny Healy-Ray attributed a dip in a road in Kerry to the fairies. Let me read out what he said, because... Do you know, I'll ask you to comment on it afterwards, Clodagh. There are numerous fairy forts in that area, he said. I know they are linked. Anyone that tampered with them back over the years paid a high price and had bad luck. He was asked if he believed in fairies, and he said there was something in these places you don't touch. They're sacred places. And then separately, when Sean Quinn was going through his troubles, his bankruptcy, some locals in County Cavan blamed his bankruptcy on the fairies back in 2011. And that was rather than the fairy tale economics, which actually caused his bankruptcy. What do you think it is, Clodagh?
Destruction of a, I think they said he might have destroyed some sort of fort, or I think there was even the DeLorean. Was also, there was an, I think they mentioned that he might have destroyed a fairy fort. But I don't know. I'm not sure. But I do believe that there's a sense that people don't touch these things on their land because there's a sense that if you go near these things, there's, you know, you'll have ill luck. And that seems to be true folklore. Everyone says, don't go near the fort, you know, and if you pass there at night time, you know, you might be abducted by the fairies or enticed in, or you'd hear fairies. And the idea that there is fairy folk that still are have to have a stronghold on the landscape, and people really believed in the fairies because they were kind of in tune. The supernatural world was in tune with us, and we kind of had to kind of live side by side. But there was a sense that if you were going to, if they wanted to live anywhere, they could live in those enclosures. And the idea that you might be, you know, like you might be taken by the fairies was a real strong idea. But if you destroyed something, there really was a great belief that there was bad luck. So if you destroyed a ring fort, then, or if you knocked down a fairy bush, which would be generally a hawthorn tree, nobody touches them. Don't knock them. Don't, you know, they were lucky to have on your land, but God forbid you bring it into the house, you know. And
so these
were fairy trees, and often they grew in the enclosures. So these solitary hawthorn trees, or shkakyal is the Irish bird, and you'd often have these lone bushes with the white flowers on them and the kind of coming of spring, sort of really solitary, resilient kind of bushes, and with thorns on them, but they were very unlucky to bring into the house, but very lucky to have on your land. But you wouldn't disturb them because they were known as fairy trees as well. So this was the sense of, but, you know, death seemed to follow if you destroyed a ring fort, a fairy fort, or a fairy tree. And there was a great belief that you'll have really bad luck or you'll die. And even in 1999, when they were doing the bypass in around Clare, and there was to go round a fairy tree, and Eddie Lenehan, the great storyteller, was involved in that. But the idea that we would move our motorway rather than go through the tree, because if we did, there'd be accidents on that part of the road.
Isn't it shocking in this day and age?
Why would you take the chance? You probably would just go with it. I try not to walk under a ladder. You know what I mean?
I try to avoid
these things. So some people, you just do it. It's part of your psyche. But I think destroying things in the landscapes that have been there forever, like, or for so many centuries, they take on, like, as generations move on, these enclosures became much more, like, associated with the past and relics of our countryside, that, you know, and relics of who we were. So maybe it's just that sense of identity and belonging, and you don't destroy where we came from, really, as well. So, oh, right. But, I mean, attributing them to the fairies, and definitely... maybe that was a way of protecting these structures, just
all right.
protecting our landscape.
And yeah. maybe leave well enough alone, fairies or not.
Yeah.
All
and
right.
And I suppose if you live in a Rath or a Liss, and you know Dún Dalgan, any of these places, it's all about going back to the name of a fort associated with the family. And everywhere in Ireland you'll find that. So I'm sure everyone look at their place names and realise they live in a fairy fort.
And that was Clodagh Doyle, curator at the National Museum of Ireland in Castlebar. Now, of course, one of the things a bank holiday does is allow at least some of us to catch up a bit on our streaming, our Netflix and all of that. And I don't know about you, but as I said at the top of the show, Meghan Markle's series With Love, Meghan, has given us plenty to talk about, from style and wellness, food, travel, all of that. One thing that's also featured has been the gadgets, the kitchen. Now, we know it's not her kitchen, but the kitchen is pretty much to die for. High-tech kitchen tools, wellness must-haves, the products, the plates, all of that. So to tell us more, we have asked Niamh Marr, Creative Director at thejournal.ie, to find out a little bit about them. All very aspirational. Can we replicate them? Do we want to? Are there dupes available? Niamh, you're very welcome along to the show.
Delighted to be here.
Now,
Thank you
and me both, we have been looking forward to this series.
Yeah, I've watched it all. I watched it all in a day.
Oh,
I binged it.
Did you?
Absolutely.
Well, you did better than me.
Yeah.
So I got to 3 episodes and I actually had to review it.
And your brain shut down and you couldn't watch it anymore.
No. And look, I it was a bit,
I had it on in the background, to be honest with you. I was doing some other bits as well. It's the perfect type of viewing to, in my opinion, you know, I feel like it gives you a little bit of a break from some of the more hectic things that are available on Netflix. Look, it's flour sprinkles, it's cookies, it's bees.
It's very much chewing gum TV. Now, exactly. I managed 3 episodes, even though I had to go and review it for The Hard Shoulder. So I kind of feel I failed already. However, we've both failed,
okay.
or at least I have, because we are referring to this series With Love, Meghan, as being hosted by Meghan Markle.
Oh, I know. Sorry. This is terrible. Yeah, it's Meghan Sussex. But I don't actually think it is as well. I think her family name is Mountbatten Windsor, but I don't know the internet.
Surely is. I've been following the Royal Correspondents, as you know, for many years now, and there is, even they are confused by it. So apparently Harry is allowed to use the name Sussex.
Okay.
But and the family name is Mountbatten. Wouldn't you have thought she'd have gone with Mountbatten? I mean, Meghan Mountbatten Windsor. Like, already it kind of sounds better.
It's got a lovely ring to it. And you know, Harry makes an appearance. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's watching it now at the bank holiday weekend.
As an extra, though, isn't it?
At the very end, yeah. Like, he turns up to a lovely to a lovely little brunch.
I'll be honest, I didn't get over the kids' birthday party where no kids turned up.
Yeah.
All I was thinking of, the mammy in me was thinking, God love them, and also the waste.
Oh, I know. But it is. It's
cut out sandwiches.
It's aspirational. And it is. And look, the whole thing, from the kitchen to the whiteness of it, to the various shades of beige that she wears, to the jumper that's thrown over her shoulders. You know, like, I don't look like that when I'm in my kitchen. Not a lot of people do. But what she does say a lot in it is, you know, you don't have to have a house like this. You don't have to have a garden like this.
I mean, that's just
this.
As well.
And she did use the word elevated. I think she did. She said it too many times. Like, that's what people are saying.
They're and
saying
I think
everything was elevated.
Yeah, she did. She did use the word, it doesn't cost much, at least twice.
Yeah. And there was a lot of memes going around. You know, she did move some things from one bag to another. And I get it, people were frustrated. But I also feel like if you're that angry at a woman who's cooking and doing some gardening and making some bits for her kids, like, don't get too caught up on it. It's lifestyle. It's just jam. Lads, relax. It's just a bit of jam.
Okay, enough about me. Right. Let's talk about why we have you here.
But basically, it's buy all the stuff.
And that's the stuff.
Stuff.
Right, stuff. And look, we know that there will be stuff coming out in the Netflix-backed stores that are going to be in America, going to be flogging the jam and the popcorn and all of this stuff.
Her brand, as ever.
And we can imagine then, a bit like old Nevin Maguire, we're going to have the aprons and the chopping boards and the pots and the pans and all of that. So we asked you to have a look at the series for the gadgets.
Yeah.
Now, one of the ones, of course, I saw, which I thought was not overly aspirational, but absolutely must have, I don't have one, is the Le Creuset range of cream pot. These are, no question, fab.
Well, they're described as the Rolls Royce of cookware, the Le Creuset. The one that she was using is the signature baster, but at the same time, they're used in practically every episode of this series. I have a couple of Le Creuset things. And when I say I use it, I'd be lying to you because I literally don't use it. But it's nice to have. I know, I'm terrible.
It comes in under illegal activities, I think.
I know, it's terrible. We use it the odd time. We don't use it enough to justify the cost of this. This stuff is expensive. You're looking at around 204 euro for the casserole dish. You're looking at about 261 euro for that baster that she used in particular. Now, you can get dupes for these. You can get a basic Dutch oven, which is essentially what these are.
Yeah, you know, I think I got one in Aldi.
Oh, yeah.
Or IKEA have them.
Absolutely. Amazon have a great range that are actually very much in the dupe world. They've got the lovely baby pink. They've got the shell colours. Like, you know the way Le Creuset is known for their red and things like that. So Amazon do have dupes at around like 40 quid or so. So you can get some nice dupes for them. But obviously, this is one of the things where you can see the Duchess coming out in Meghan. Like, she uses Le Creuset a lot and it's in that beautifully curated kitchen. So, I mean, if you want to feel regal, Le Creuset is definitely the Rolls Royce of cookware.
Indeed. And of course, one of the nice things about Le Creuset is because of the range of colours that they do, you can just match them to whatever, if that's your thing.
Absolutely. Terribly heavy, have to say. I think you can get other deals on them. They don't actually have to be Le Creuset. There's something of it being a bit of a staple and there's a bit of a status symbol attached to Le Creuset as well. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. But like, there is a bit of a status symbol if you've got
But it's a kind of an achievable one. I mean, I know like 200 quid on a pot, but they are going to literally last you a lifetime.
They are. They absolutely are.
So as an investment piece, it wouldn't be the worst.
It wouldn't be the worst, no. And I mean, Meghan was definitely in the high-low mindset when she was creating this type of content. Like, there are things in that kitchen that are very spenny. And then there are some things, which I'll go into later, that are very affordable.
Yeah, and of course, one of those is, we saw her in every episode, started out the way, I'll be honest now, if I'm going to match the royals, here's where I'm going to do it. I start every day with a French press and some coffee.
Yes. And this is where I think a lot of people were like, ooh, that looks pretty good. She made this cup of coffee for her friend Mindy Kaling when she visited her set kitchen, whatever you want to call it. And it's the French press, the Bodum French press to be particular. And it actually only cost $13.95. And it stood the test of time because it's been around this particular French press since the 80s. Now, I think there's a lot of different gadgets that you could weigh up, you know.
I've had them. I've been there.
It tells you it does this. If you want a good French cup of coffee, it shouldn't be costing you more than 15 euro for a good French press. So I think that it's good that we weren't looking at something that was going to cost 150 euro. I don't need to provide a dupe for that. Go and buy that Bodum one. It stood the test of time.
Absolutely. Now, something that may not last the test of time and certainly won't in my kitchen are dried flour sprinklers.
Oh, the flour sprinkle.
On everything.
With one, a lot of
with
things.
Child's breakfast, right up to, I don't know, stuff going in the bath.
But she was elevating, though. Sinead, she was elevated.
Where did you get those, Niamh?
No, I've no idea. Well, you get them as part of the asever.com spring collection that's coming out in 2025. You
would
have to make a date with the website in order to get them. So these are a part of her product range that she's coming out. But
I mean,
are
they seem to
flowers
come in. They seem to come like in a packet or in a jar, the way you'd get cinnamon or something.
Yeah. Oh, she just has them everywhere, dotted around that kitchen. But it was a very strategic placement of an upcoming product in her As Ever range. So they're dried edible flowers that, again, as she says, you just put them on anything. She put them into shortbread cookies. She put them on her fruit platters. She put them over everything. Now, it did become a bit of a viral meme. People were putting them on beans on toast and pizzas and hot dogs and saying, I elevated my takeout. I mean, so there's a bit of slagging going on with that. Look, it's not for everyone. And I think if for certain events, yes, put some edible flowers on a few sandwiches, but realistically, most people will just pick them off.
Okay. And I mean, another thing which seemed to catch her by surprise, and welcome to the world of microwavable popcorn, Megan, was this transferring, you know, this thing where you make the supermarket popcorn and then you put it in a different bag and tie a ribbon on it and claim it's your own.
I feel like this...
We've all done that, by the way.
Yeah, I feel like this was Megan's way of, you know, being relatable by saying that, look, we don't have time to make peanut butter chocolate covered pretzels, but you can buy them in the supermarket, and then what you can do is transfer them to a bag and write a beautiful piece of calligraphy writing, because she used to work as like a calligrapher as well.
Yeah.
So her handwriting is really beautiful and it does look very impressive.
Well, what we didn't get was the kind of that ethical argument about whether you pass it off as your own or not.
I know, yeah. I mean, I would. To be honest.
Okay. Well, you heard it. That's fine.
I'd be passing it off as my own. If I was going to the effort of moving something from one bag to another, I want them to think that I made it. You know, I feel like that's what she was trying
All
to
do. Right.
That was probably something relatable she was trying to achieve that missed the mark slightly, I would imagine.
Niamh says it's okay. Right. Now, the next thing I missed, but it seems to be some kind of a mixer unit.
Yeah. The Vitamix. So Vitamix Explainer E310, this isn't the first time we've seen Megan really talk about this. She has used it before in some way. Remember that she comes from a lifestyle background before she met the prince and all that. She did have her own lifestyle blog called The Tig. So the Vitamix, it's basically a blender. You can make smoothies, you can make soups, you can make dips, you can make sauces. In this particular series, she makes a pesto, which again, very easy to do. But it's €489. So it's expensive and it's bulky. So we all don't have these
huge kitchens
or counter spaces. So you can get the same exact pesto if you use a NutriBullet for less than €120 on juicers.ie. And basically you're getting the exact same thing. But the Vitamix, it's quite American, I think, and it's something that they love as a blender. You know, it's supposed to keep all the nutrients and stuff like that. But honestly, I don't want to be spending more than €150.
It's a bit like that argument that you have here about KitchenAid.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's saying it's not amazing, it's not fabulous, it's not gorgeous, but like £500 for a mixer when you can get it.
It's fab. And we've talked about this before.
A lot less.
About how you have to pretty much make a car park in your kitchen for all the appliances that you have, and how people are now getting garage doors to hide all of these things. Another way to do that is to just not buy all of these things as well. So you can achieve this by blending up a pesto with just a hand blender or a NutriBullet as well. But yeah, it's definitely a favourite for Megan's.
Okay, and what else did you spot now on the programme?
Oh, this beautiful gooseneck stag teapot. Oh, I just thought it was very aesthetically pleasing to my eyes. It also can be used as a pour over coffee. $67.95. So again, not that expensive, but it is sold out now on Amazon. The white one that was in the show is sold out, but you can get a lovely matte black one.
Do you think that's because of the show?
I feel like it might be, yeah, because it's so pretty. This is the thing as well. Everybody's hating on Megan. It is in the top 10 on Netflix.
I know.
People are watching.
I know.
This
and actually,
show.
One of the supermarkets in the UK, now I'm guessing it was probably Waitrose or Morrison's, had people coming in, streams of people coming in looking for edible flowers in packets.
Well, this
figuring
is it,
they
yeah.
have them.
I know. Always exercise caution if you're going to be eating flowers, though, guys. This is just a little bit. We do not know what is edible and what is not. But yeah, so the stag teapot, she made it for her friend who's the owner of Tatcha in one of the episodes, which is skincare. And it's just beautiful. I mean, the long gooseneck on it. I mean, it really is. I'd say it makes you feel quite luxurious, but $67.95, it's not too bad at all. And then the final final thing that I spotted was very achievable, and it is a lemon squeezer, cheap and cheerful on Amazon for €13, and it's the classic yellow and green with an ergonomic handle, and it will last you. It is heavy, it is metal, and it is the best way to squeeze your lemons if you want to feel like a duchess.
Right. Well, if you feel like squeezing your Duchess's lemons, then that is the best advice. You see, that was out before you thought about it.
What did you say?
And listen, Niamh, thank you for coming in and telling us all about that. Did you enjoy the series overall?
I did. I really
did. You're going to watch series two, are you?
Absolutely. I did enjoy the series. And I do think that people level a certain amount of hatred towards this woman, which I don't think is necessarily fair. And also, like I said before, it's not that serious. It's just a bit of jam.
Yeah. All right. Good life lessons. Listen, you're off now for a few months. I say off.
Just off creating off. Human life. Yeah. Keeping the baby alive.
The very best of luck with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll all go fine. Thanks and so busy much. Times ahead for you. You'll be doing your pureeing and your you maybe absolutely. Have to get out your Le Creuset.
Oh, this is it. I'm going to be doing a lot of I wonder how Megan would deal with ready-made meals, because that's what I'm going to be living off.
Oh, I'd say they're banned.
First few months of this baby's life. That's all I'm going to be eating anyway.
And I don't blame you. All right. Niamh Marr, Commercial Creative Director at thejournal.ie. Goodbye to you for the time being. And do relax and put your feet up as much as you can. That's all we have time for here on the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy your bank holiday weekend. If you'd like to get in touch with us during the week, it's thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or I'm over on social media. You can find me on X, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, all of those places. And I love to hear from all of our pod listeners with any suggestions you might have for guests or topics for us to cover. Producing this week, Aisling Lynch, Stephen McLoone was on sound. We will be back again next weekend, and we look forward to your company then.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan, Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.